So good morning, church. Okay, all of us are very excited to go to this new place, new church, right? And what was the theme for the camp? Revive, restore, and redefine. And then there was a small hyphen. Then fill in the blank. A call for a new beginning. Means it is not the new beginning, it's a call for you. So all of us to start all afresh, right? Because it's a new place, new atmosphere, new ambience, and everything new. So today, the message that we thought that would be appropriate after the camp especially, because in the camp already Pastor Narain spoke to us about how to revive, restore, and redefine, right? All of us remember his message, right? What he spoke? Yes, excellent. So today we are going to do something on revive, okay? And maybe in the coming week we'll do something related to the theme that we had. So now this revive, restore, and redefine is not only the camp theme, but it is our life theme. Can you tell your neighbor, it's my life theme? Yes. So it's like a cycle, you know, you revive, restore, you redefine, again you revive. Again, you know, it's like a cycle. It never stops and it should not stop, because the moment we stop, our spiritual life will also go like that, all right? So revive. Anybody knows what is the definition? If we have heard very clearly what Pastor Narain said, what is the definition of revive? No looking into your notes, huh? If you have notes. Okay, you can see. It's okay. What is the definition of revive? Common man's definition, revive. You know, when I was typing revive, the detergent came, revive. You know that revive which you wash the clothes? Because according to the media or something, revive means to make it new, right? So you put that liquid in the clothes and it will make your clothes look new. Revive from all your old clothes, old stuff, and you become a new person, right? So it's something like that. So the biblical definition of the word revive is to bring back that was dead, okay? And revive is a translation. So in I've not mentioned it here, but in Hebrews, the word revive is called chaya, if I'm pronouncing it properly, chaya, to live or cause to live. And it's used for restoration to life. Okay, so basically you are dead and it is caused to live. And it also means to return to life, to recover life or strength, to live anew, to become reanimated or reinvigorated. All right, and then the spiritual definition of revival is a spiritual awakening after being in a state of dormancy. Or stagnation, and is usually characterized by a renewed appreciation of God's holiness and a renewed passion. In short, you get a new revelation and you get a new insight saying, wow, I was very stagnant, now I am revived. Just like the clothes revive, after being dull, your clothes become new after putting that liquid. It's similar to that. You were dead and now you come back to life. Okay, so last week we heard all about revive, restore, and all that. But the question is, what keeps us from reviving? What keeps you from reviving? Can you tell your neighbor what keeps you from reviving? You have 2 seconds. No, you don't have to say what keeps you from reviving. You have to say what keeps you from reviving. What keeps you from reviving? What are the obstacles? And if your neighbor is listening, you have to pray for your neighbor. Okay, what keeps you from reviving, or what keeps you from changing yourself or something like that? Anybody wants to shoot out what your neighbor has said? Not you. Oh, you. Your spouse keeps you from reviving. Okay, and what else? Time? Busyness. Yes. So you don't need to think about spiritual reliving, because you're like, "Ha, theek hai, whenever I get time, I'll pray, or whenever I have, at least I'm going to church, right? At least I'm active, I'm going to camps and all." So generally we have these things, right? So there are certain obstacles that we need to look at. Maybe discouraging situations, some dead and buried incidences, like you just don't want to, those experiences. Then you strive harder and harder, but it doesn't work. So you stop, you become stagnant. Then you stop trying. And then, you know, sometimes you don't revive because you question God. We question God. Sometimes we don't revive because we may become bitter. And we live in it the whole life. Oh, that person did this. That person did this. Now, so today I thought that, you know, how do we bring about this concept of revive, you know, to the church? And as a church, how can we come out as revived people, or people who will cause revival wherever we are going? There is a story which is in the book of Genesis. Do you know any story which is about well, W-E-L-L, well, Kua? Abraham, very good. Anyone else? Isaac? The Samaritan woman in the New Testament. Good. Any other instances of well? Jacob, very good. Jacob, what happened to Jacob in the well, near the well? He met his future wife, right? So there are a lot of things which God speaks about in and around near the well. Okay, so there is this. So why was well so important in the olden times? Now we have all our taps and filters and, you know, those RO filters and all. Water is this, Hidco water, this water. But those days they had wells. What is the importance of wells? Wells. Spring water, yeah. To what to do with the well? To draw water, to drink and refresh. See, they had a lot of cattle those days, you know, farming. So they used all this water to give life, basically, in short, right? The wells were used to give life, to rejuvenate, to refresh people, right? So wells were of utmost importance. Okay, so they had rivers, but the wells was located in places where they lived, like how we have taps. Like that, there was a community and they had one well. Another community and they had a well. So that community used that well. Okay. So that is how the importance of wells were. Now, why am I talking about this well is that, so wells have always been of great strategic importance, especially in the arid parts of the East, to sustain life for families and communities. So there are mentioned many times in scriptures, as we said, about wells. So we also know the revelation of God came to Hagar, okay, where? Near the well. Rebecca's encounter with Abraham's servant was near the well. Okay, Jacob's well, as we all said. What about David's well? Do you all remember what happened with David near the well? This could be a little tricky. Come on, those who have read your Bibles. David and the well story. What happened? Don't remember. Okay, I'll tell you. Don't worry. You remember, David was feeling thirsty. Okay? And there was a huge battle that was going on. Okay? Very fierce battle. And he was feeling thirsty and he expressed it. And he said, "I'm feeling thirsty." And three men, okay, who were very, very strong men of his, the commanders in chief, that is Abishai, Joab, and one more, they went to the enemy's territory. In their well, they got water and they gave to David. And David, what do you think David would have done? No, he threw the water. Itna risk leke, you go get the water, and he throws the water. You know what he says? He says, "I am not, you know, I'm not in that position where you sacrifice yourself and then I drink that water. I am a common man. I am not God. this water needs to be for God. This deserves that much of importance, that this water cannot be drunk by me. I need to sacrifice it to God. So he did not drink at all, and he gave it to God. So that is the importance of the well. Okay. So, yes, so that is David's well. Then the Samaritan woman, Jesus met the Samaritan woman at the well, and he said, I am the living water. So the water is the water, and the well is very important to revive us. So can you say, I got a well in me? Yes. So today we are there to revive that well. Maybe that well was there long time ago. Somebody had dug it in you. Maybe not like literally, but like a spiritual wellspring. Like, you know, like how some of us said, it's a spring of water. Somebody has introduced you to the Lord. And you said, wow, this is exciting. This is so much of, you know, so much of things to learn, so much of things to grow. And you were so excited that time. So the well came up. You were so excited and you were overflowing with joy, overflowing with so much love, and all the fruit of the Spirit were able to see. Like you had faith, you had so much of, you know, passion. But suddenly, what happened if the well is not used continuously? It dries up. So today, probably all of our wells need to be rechecked. Okay, because God is there to fill us up, revive us. I mean, maybe there is a dead situation, but God will revive us, right? So I will take this story from the book of Genesis about Isaac. Okay. So we'll read. If you have your Bibles, because it's small fonts, those at the back, maybe you can read it through the Bible. It is in Genesis 26, 12 to 33. It's a short story. Isaac planted crops in that land, and the same year reaped a hundredfold because the Lord blessed him. The man became rich and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. Now, just for those who do not know, Isaac is the son of Abraham. Abraham is the father of Isaac, who, like, you know, whom God had promised. Like, Abraham is quite known in the book, because he's a patriarchal figure. So God had told Abraham at the age of 100, he became a father to Isaac. Okay, so it was a miracle. Isaac was a miracle child. And through Isaac, there were descendants of Israel who were born. Okay, so now this is the story of Isaac. Verse 14, he had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father, Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, move away from us. You have become too powerful for us. So Isaac moved away from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar, where he settled. Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died. And he gave them the same names his father had given them. Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there. But the herders of Gerar quarreled with those of Isaac and said, the water is ours. So he named the well Esek, because they disputed with him. Can you tell your neighbor Esek? Yes. So the first well's name was Esek. Right. Now, then they dug another well, but they quarreled over that one also. So he named it Sitna. Can you tell your neighbor Sitna? Okay, so first well was Esek. Second well was Sitna. Excellent. He moved on from there and dug another well, and no one quarreled over it. He named it Rehoboth. What did he name it? Rehoboth. Very good. Saying, now the Lord has given us room and we will flourish in the land. Okay, from there he went up to Beersheba. That night the Lord appeared to him and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you and will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. Isaac built an altar there. Okay, Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. There he pitched his tent and there his servants dug a well. So which number is this well? Fourth. One was Esek, Sitna, Rehoboth. Now this is not named, but it says it is near the altar of the Lord so that he remembers. So you see the significance of the wells? Okay. Now, meanwhile, Abimelech had come to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, his personal advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his forces. Isaac asked them, why have you come to me since you were hostile to me and sent me away? What did they reply? They answered, we saw clearly that the Lord was with you. Can you tell your neighbor, we saw clearly that the Lord was with you? Yeah, basically you're telling each other the promises of God, that we saw that the Lord was with you, right? So we said, there ought to be a sworn agreement between us and you. Let us make a treaty with you that you will do us no harm, just as we did not harm you, but always treated you well and sent you away peacefully. And now you are blessed by the Lord. Isaac then made a feast for them and they ate and drank. Early the next morning, the men swore an oath to each other. Then Isaac sent them on their way and they went away peacefully. That day, Isaac's servants came and told him about the well they had dug. They said, we have found water. He called it Sheba. What is it? This is which number? Fifth. One was near the altar. This is the fifth well, which is called Sheba. And to this day, the name of the town has been Beersheba. Okay, so this is a very significant well. And we can see that over the period of time, last to last week, we did Joshua, right? Joshua was taking the promised land. So when Joshua was taking the promised land, this place, Beersheba, was taken by the tribe of Judah and Simeon. Okay, so what it's very significant as to how God leads his people, ancestors, you know, how they planned everything. And so it happened that over the period of time, his descendants, you know, came to that land. All right, but I'll give you a little background as to why this guy Abimelech, right? His name is Abimelech only, no? So what does he do? Why does he say that God has blessed him? So a little background is that in that time there was famine. When there is famine, do you expect water anywhere? Famine, drought, nothing. Because there is famine, there is no water, right? Means, so there was famine. But on the other hand, Isaac, wherever he was digging, there was water. So that's how he saw that this guy, wherever he's digging, there is water to drink. There is, it's flourishing in and around where he is. And that's how when people look at us, okay, they will see the wells of, you know, God reviving us. And not only you, but the neighbors around you will see that and they will come to you and say, truly we see God's hand upon you. Okay, though there will be famines, though there will be plagues, though there will be a lot of, you know, heat or I don't know what, but God will place his hand upon all of us and we will see a revival, okay, coming in and around us. So that is the well that we are talking about. Now, we also, another background was that now Isaac didn't want to actually stay there. He didn't want to stay in the place of Gerar. He wanted to move to Egypt. Do you remember anyone who moved to Egypt? Anyone from the Bible who moved to Egypt? Joseph. Yeah. So Joseph went to Egypt, right? But God said, you are not moving from here. You are going to be here only. This is where I have placed you. This is the promised land, right? So, although Isaac wanted to move, God said no. So when God promised him that you're not going to move, I'm going to bless you here, he will keep his promise. He will revive you. So we need not go on seeking for other places of revival. But God will give us a revive. God will revive us here in this place. Can you tell your neighbor, God will revive me in this place? Yes. And God said, stay wherever you are. Okay. Now, what am I coming to, you know, by this conclusion is that life was not easy for Isaac, right? So when he dug the well that his dad had made, people went and quarreled with him. There was dispute and they started. So do you think dispute will be easy to manage? There'll be jealousy, enmity. There'll be a lot of struggles. Maybe anything that he is doing, they will quarrel with him. They will say, kya kar raha hai? Why are you doing this? So life has never been easy. Although we see a lot of blessings, but it is never an easy thing. So just because we're saying revive, revive, restore, restore, renew, renew, it's not going to be easy. Somebody will fall sick. Somebody will have a fight. Somebody will, lose a job. We will have those struggles. But we need to focus that, yes, today I'm going to dig up this well. Today I'm going to see that God will give me a revival in this place, right? So Isaac was asked to be where he is. Be where you are. Skipping churches, skipping your relationships, skipping your situations will not bring dead situations to life. Because we have also seen many people going from one place to the other just so that they feel good. They feel, you know, oh, there is a blessing there, so I will go to that place. There is a blessing here, so I will go to that place. No, God is saying wherever you are, you will be revived. Yes, it's a promise from God. So let's only, the only thing that God is asking us to do is be where you are. Face the challenges, for that will increase your faith. Okay, so Isaac had more faith in God than among the people who were trying to trouble him, right? Then don't overlook God's blessing. Isaac planted crops, that land, and the same year reaped a hundredfold because the Lord blessed him. The man became rich and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So obstacles that we face when we are in the process to revive is, could be, one, jealousy. Okay, people might be jealous or they might get envious. Then, you remember what did those people say? That because God is blessing you, what should you do? What should you do? Because God is blessing you and we are not able to contain it, you should go away, move away. Right? He says, they tell him, you go away. Not because he's a bad person, because he's a blessing. So it could happen vice versa also. Not only because of your suffering you move away, but because of your blessing also, sometimes people may ask you to move away because they are insecure. Okay? So when there is the process of a revival starts, there will be jealousy, there will be insecurity, there could be a discomfort like how Isaac was facing. Of course, it's not easy to move from place to place. How many of us have stayed in rental house or living in rental house? Most of us, right? And is it easy to move? You should ask the people who get transfers, like, you know, to just start all over again. Right? You know, it's so difficult. But there is a discomfort. So these are all obstacles that Isaac faced when he was in the process to revive those dead wells, revive those areas which were dug up and then buried by the other people, dug up by the father, his father, and buried by these Philistines. Now, What does it mean to dig up his father's wells? Okay, yeah. Digging up his father's wells. So number one well, which was his first well? Ezek, right? Ezek was the first well. So when father means his father Abraham had dug up, but then it was then dead. So he was digging up the first well. Probably remembering God's provision. He said, God, you provided for my father. Then now I think you will provide for me. Because as I said earlier, it was a land of famine, right? Land was full of famine. There was nothing to eat. Probably he remembered God's provision when he was digging up the well. So he was reviving that spirit, right? Then emphasizing on God's promise to grow and flourish. So he said, God, you are the God of my father. You made my father flourish. So I want to claim this promise to grow and flourish. Because even God says, I promised Abraham that his descendants will flourish. So we will flourish. You will also flourish. Maybe he was, this digging up the well also meant trusting God to do miracles again in our lives. Can you tell your neighbor, God will do miracles again in my life? Yes. So revive means you revive and you trust God and say, God, I'm going to take this step of faith and I'm going to revive this and say, God, I'm going to dig up this well and I'm going to trust you for the miracle of water. Then digging up his father's wells also meant raising the dead situations to life. Maybe things are not happening at all. Maybe there's a lot of obstacles in our way. Dead means there's no life. It's not possible. But digging up. Then challenging the situation of famine. Who can go against the famine? He's not God, right? It is a natural calamity. Nobody can go against it. But he says, I am challenging the situation of famine. Means in spite of a famine, I'm going to dig up this well. Right? Then allowing others to witness God's work in our lives. For example, even the Philistines, when they saw what? The wells are filled up with water. He is flourishing. Hum log yahan pe famine mein hai. There is so much famine. Khana nahi hai, pani nahi hai. But he is having so much to eat, so much of water, so much of cattle and so much of, you know. So people are looking at God's work in our lives. And that is when we take the decision to revive. Envisioning ourselves. Maybe he saw digging up my father's wells were an envisioning part. Means he flourished. So am I going to flourish. I am going to trust God. I am going to bring back all the dead situations to life. So he envisioned himself and said, this is just one situation, but there could be other. So as you see, he did not quarrel. Nowhere in the Bible it says that when he was digging up the wells, first well, what happened? Was it successful? No. Okay, people came and caused dispute. Second well? No. But did he say, was he discouraged? No. Third time? Then they stopped. Okay, they also might have said, "Arey, itna usko trouble kar rahe hain. We are troubling him so much. Still, he is, you know, having that courage to go on." Then the fourth well was the promise of God, and the fifth well was so envisioning ourselves and saying, "God, I'm going to go ahead, even though there are struggles, there are challenges. I'm going to revive. To revive, we need to dig too. So remember that God's promise, His love, and sacrifice." On the cross. Okay. So this God has already done for us. Right. Like his father Abraham prepared the wells for us. What has Jesus Christ done for us? He has prepared the way for us. Right. Now it is our responsibility to dig up those wells within ourselves. And say, God, I'm not going to allow the dead situations to remain like that. Because you, my father, Jesus, has put this well in my heart. And we have to revive it. It may be dead because of certain situation. Maybe there is a famine. Maybe things are not working out. But I'm not going to let go. Because people are discouraging me. There are a lot of people, though I am working hard and hard and hard, and they're coming and putting mud. You know, there are sometimes when we work in an organization, we work so hard, but somebody, something, they come and tell the boss and it's all gone. They have put all, our hard work into vain. So we need to say that, Lord, I'm going to envision this. I'm going to revive the situation with your help. Because Jesus, you prepared the way. You are the light of the world. You have put this well in my heart. So in verse 32 it says, that day. So this is your well. Okay. Can you tell your neighbor, this is my well? Yes. So you have to now think of strategies as to how are we going to revive this well. Okay. So that day, Isaac's servants came and told him about the well they had dug. They said, we've found water. He called it Sheba. And to this day, the name of the town has been Beersheba. Beersheba was the territory of the tribe of Simeon and Judah. So what did we learn from this Isaac's story? He did not give up. And he went on. His father might have done 4 wells. He went on to do 5 wells. Right? So probably maybe our mentor in the day for day one has introduced us to the Lord Jesus Christ or his salvation. But how am I going to increase in number and say I'm going to have many wells, many revivals, many points where I'm going to flourish, be fruitful? How am I going to be fruitful? So what are my wells that I need to revive like Isaac did? To revive anything that was closed from the spiritual sense will have a lot of challenges. Maybe you will want to pray, but that day only somebody will fall sick, or maybe you will not be able to wake up, or maybe you will have a project to do. You know, when you decide that you want to revive, there will be challenges. Are we willing to face these challenges and encounter it patiently? So first day, I was not able to pray. Maybe the second day, I wake up again. The third day, it will not happen all 365 days, right? Someday we will get the answer so that we revive ourselves. Are we willing to face these challenges patiently and, you know, and unlock the provisions that God has kept for us? In Revelations 2:4, it says, revive your love for God. Yet I hold this against you. You have forsaken the love you had at first. So revive your love for God. How do I love God? Can you tell your neighbor, how do you want to love God now? No, you have to tell your neighbor. What will you do to revive your love for God? I know you love God. There is no question. That's why you're in the church. But how do you intend to do more for him? Can you tell your neighbor? Discuss it. You will get a minute. Okay, don't worry that we will not, like, you know, for every question we'll not tell you to discuss. This is just the very important basic thing that we need to revive. The love for God. And we cannot take it casually, because if we do not love God, or if we just say, okay, God, you know that I love you. You know that you love me means what? When you feel, you want to feel loved, you want so many things to be done, right? You want so many actions to be done. Maybe when nobody wishes you on your birthday, you feel unloved. But the person says, you know, right, I love you. So if that is not, like, you know, to show that you love. Love has to be shown in action, in your behavior, in your words, in your thinking. Okay, so yet I hold this against you. God will hold this against you. I am not saying, God is saying. In Revelations 2:4, you have forsaken the love you had at first. Alright, so it is up to you to revive that well of love. That well where you loved God so crazily that you were okay to leave everything and run after God. Revive your spiritual gifts. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God. Grace in its various forms. So you can tell your neighbor, I have a gift from God. Yes. So you might have a gift of God. Maybe the gift of faith. Maybe the gift of serving. How are we using this? Or are we thinking, how can I use this gift? So revive your spiritual gifts. Okay. Then revive your passion to serve His kingdom. Now, this indirectly points to the first point. Revive your love for God. If you have love for God, you will have the passion to serve His kingdom. Because you'll say, wow, I want to see it grow. I want to see it flourishing. It says in Romans 12:11, never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Can we say that we lack in zeal at times? When we are tired, when we, you know, are overworked. But in the Bible, in Romans 12:11, says never be lacking. Means we have to work round the clock. We have to keep that zeal going. Although we are tired, I think we rest for some time, then we get back to our feet and say, Lord, I'm zealous for you, right? So revive your passion to serve His kingdom. Now remember, these are your wells. You need to revive it. These could be dead. These could be buried. These could be not existing anymore. But you need to revive it. That's what we are saying. Okay? Next is revive and move to the next level. Many times there is no issue about praying, like asking for prayer. Everybody can ask for prayer. But what is the question is, how long will we depend on others' prayers? We need to start praying for others. So many times we call up and say, please pray for me, okay? I'm going for this interview. But have we asked them and saying, hey, you're going for an interview, can I pray for you? Hey, you are not feeling well, can I pray for you? Right? How many times have we done it? So it is going to the next level. That is revive and move to the next level. Right? Then, finally, revive our mindset. Don't allow it to be the way it always was. I need to change my mindset to the eternal perspective. That means, I live in this world. I have a job. I have a family. But what is it? It is all for the eternity. Right? So therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off. Can you tell your neighbor, throw off? Yes. Throw off everything that hinders. Okay? Means not like everything that... You cannot throw off your family and your job and all. But anything that is a hindrance, okay, means that does not allow you to revive. Like the Philistines did not allow Isaac to revive because they were constantly digging. So he moved. He moved. He moved, right? So anything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. So you remove all that and let us run with perseverance. Like how Isaac was persevering, right? Eventually, how many wells did he dig up? 5. Like that, we need to be perseverant. Perseverance, a race marked out for us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So eventually, he is the one who will revive our wells, right? So although Isaac was persevering, but Jesus is all the more persevering, right? He said, yes, I'm giving you, I'm reviving you. I am doing this for you. Because what does the last line say? Can we all read it out together for the joy? 1, 2, 3. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Right? Amen. So he endured it all for us. He has given us the starting point. Come on, revive, revive. And here we are today in this position where we need to look back into our dead situations, where we need to revive all these things. Revive your love for God is the utmost importance. Revive your spiritual gifts. He has given you gifts. Don't say that I have nothing. Revive your passion to serve His kingdom. Everybody, because you have been gifted, you can serve God. Right? Revive and move to the next level. And revive our mindsets. So this is, I believe, what God wants us to say today, that, you know, this is the first step to our revival, to a new Renewed Hope community. Right? Because it says revive, restore, and redefine, right? So This is the beginning, and I will call upon Virgil to pray.